Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, is next. And support for Mouthful on KRCB-FM comes from our members and from the new Jack and Tony's on 4th Street in Santa Rosa's old Railroad Square, offering American cuisine for the discerning palate. Reservations at 526-4347. And from Barn Diva Restaurant and Lounge, just off the plaza in Healdsburg, committed to a sustainable and locally sourced menu. With special family-style dinners on Wednesday and Sunday brunch, kids and dogs are always welcome in the dining gardens. Barn Diva reservations and menu at barndiva.com. It's 7 o'clock and time for the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour and Mouthful.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's far to be raining out.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? Have a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mashed potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? You had a good weekend, not quite so much rain, huh? But enough to make me feel anyway that, you know, maybe it's really going to end the drought. We're going to head to the Atlantic seaboard on Mouthful tonight. But first, a couple things I wanted to tell you about. If you like to listen to Mouthful's podcasts, if you expect them to show up, maybe in your iTunes folder, or, you know, you want to check something out, you forgot it, an email. A website or something, and you haven't seen them for a couple months, don't worry. They are coming. Our engineer who is in charge of posting the podcast, which actually takes more time than I had realized, for it takes about the same amount of time to ready a show for podcast uploading as it does to actually do the show. It takes him about an hour per show. And we are upgrading a lot of our equipment here at KRCB in advance of our signal increase, and he's just been overloaded. So we're a couple months behind in getting the podcast up, but he promises me Mouthful is a top priority, and they will be uplinked really soon. And if you want to stay up to date on that situation and upcoming guests and that sort of thing, you can always, if you're on Facebook, become a fan of Mouthful, and whenever there's something happening, I posted, including a roster of each week's guests. So you just type in Mouthful, and you type in Mouthful, and you'll get a couple things, and then keep typing The Wine Country's Most Delicious. And before you get all the way to the end, it'll pop up. And it's easy and free. Went to Mustard Magic last night. The thing that's so dazzling about it is how it looks. It's in that old three-story former Christian Brothers winery, stone walls and winding staircases and huge barrel rooms, and they just decorate it so wonderfully and whimsically, and you might feel like you're in a Van Gogh painting, Lautrec painting. It was just really fun, and I was sitting there talking with a friend that I'd taken with me. And I looked up, and lo and behold, there were tonight's guests. And it's got to be a couple thousand people there. So I always love it when I run into people like that. And on that note, I would like to welcome, first of all, Annie Vercelli. It's been a long time since you were here on Mouthful, Annie, and I am glad to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Michelle.
And Annie, of course, is culinary arts and wine culinary arts instructor and wine instructor at Santa Rosa Junior College. And she also rounded up tonight's guests. We have returning, and I think it was just a year ago that you were here. We have Carl Brandhorst, president of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, and Dave Barber, vice president. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.
So you come out, is it organized around this event that takes place in Sacramento?
Yes. We attend a Unified Wine and Grape Symposium and are promoting some East Coast wines. And after the symposium in Sacramento, we come over to Sonoma and do a couple events here too. And this is the second year we're doing this event. So that's great.
Great. Let's familiarize people with this association. You stretch from all the states that touch on the Atlantic.
Including Vermont, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, which technically don't touch, but we include them as the Atlantic Seaboard.
And then can everyone out there name all the states that touch on the Atlantic Seaboard? Let's see. We would start with Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina,
Virginia.
I was going to be Virginia, Delaware. Don't tell me Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut?
Connecticut,
Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Maine.
You missed Maryland.
And New Hampshire. New Hampshire still touches the Atlantic.
Okay, I think I can picture that. That's right, Maryland. I missed Maryland, and I shouldn't have, because we love Baltimore.
Bay,
Chesapeake Bay, Baltimore, and Homicide Life on the Streets. You can't miss Maryland. Okay, so I did pretty good. I got maybe an A-, B-plus in geography for the night. The wine industry there, if I remember what y'all talked about last time, wine industry goes back to some of the earliest days of the United States. You want to do a quick history?
Sure. One of the reasons the colonists first came over was not necessarily freedom, religious freedom, et cetera, but the British were thirsty, and they were getting their wine from France, but they were fighting with the French, so they heard about all the grapes growing naturally in the North American continent, so they sailed over with missions to find the grapes, make the wine, and send it back. Unfortunately, they tried, and they weren't overly successful because of phylloxera, which they didn't realize, other weather climates and disease and everything else.
So phylloxera was already a problem, and on the East Coast.
It wasn't native to the East Coast, but the native grapes, the natural grapes that are growing there, the indigenous and species, have built up a resistance to phylloxera. But unfortunately, the species there didn't produce as great. The grapes grew, but the wine made from the grapes wasn't as palatable as they would have liked. So they tried bringing vinifera from Europe, growing it, and that's where they ran into the problems. And they just kept trying and trying. In fact, the House of Burgesses from Williamsburg, one of the first laws they passed was that every landowner had to plant 20 vines.
Really? Had to.
It was a law to try and get that industry going. Unfortunately, as I said, they weren't overly successful. But fortunately, around that time, they did find another agricultural crop that kept the colony going, that being tobacco.
Tobacco. Yeah. That's really interesting. What was... Now, Thomas Jefferson, we know, had a very sophisticated palate, spent time in France. Did he grow? I forget if he grew.
He tried.
I thought, okay.
He experimented quite a bit.
And he wasn't successful either.
He was successful, but not in the way of producing a lot of wine, because he just hadn't gotten there. He had identified a lot. He had a garden and vineyards that he tried experimenting with and seeing what would do the best. His conclusion was that hybrids would do best in Virginia because that would seem to be the best. In particular, the Alexander grape variety seemed to do the best. That has since passed, and since there were some grapes after he died, and I believe it was 1870 or 1826, there found some other grapes coming through in Charlottesville. A Norton grape, which is a native grape, Vitis estivalis, not a Vitis vinifera, but a Vitis estivalis, that seemed to do very well and made a palatable wine. And that's where the industry started to grow, shipping a lot of wine over to Paris and France and in London especially, and fulfilling that dream and making a good wine.
And it was from the Norton grape?
Norton grape.
And what was the wine called?
Virginia's Claret.
Oh, it's called Claret. Okay.
That
okay.
Because it was Norton grape. And the Norton grape being so successful in Virginia, the whole trade route, they started planting it down the Ohio River, over the mountains, the Ohio River, Cincinnati, Southern Ohio planted a lot of it. And it ended up in Missouri, too. So even to this day, there's a lot of Norton growing in Missouri. Missouri and Virginia are the dominant grapes or wines, places where Norton grows.
Right around Herman, Missouri.
Now, what happened to all of this during Prohibition?
things died.
Yeah.
That was a noble experiment that didn't work.
Yeah. And did a lot of, was a lot of, were a lot of the vines taken out?
Well, actually, prior to Prohibition started earlier in Virginia because, it, you know, 1919 is when it passed for the nation.
Right.
But prior to that, it had the up grassroots feeling in the Bible Belt and other places in the South, and we suffered that way too.
Mm-hmm.
Civil War also did a lot of harm to Virginia because we all hear the history of Civil War being fought in cities, but a lot of the war was fought in the countryside, i.e. in the vineyards. And then when it was completed too, there weren't as many men coming back to tend the vineyards. So that was the first of the 1-2 shot that sort of killed the industry for a while.
Mm-hmm. And then when did it start to come back on the, I mean, we can sort of trace, I think a lot of people know when, what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
But how did things start to come back on the eastern seaboard?
Basically, in the mid-1900s, people were starting to look at it, and especially into the 1970s, where people had land, people had farms, dairy farms, and whatever. And with urbanization, a lot of these farms were being subdivided into housing developments. And the landowner said, I don't want to see this for my children, my heirs. So they said, what else can we grow? Dairy farms are becoming much more expensive to operate. And a couple innovative people said, I think we can probably grow some grapes. And a couple people tried, and it was successful. And more people did it. And basically in the mid-1970s, that's when Virginia wine was reborn.
Mm-hmm. And now in your association, mm-hmm. how many wineries?
Oh, I don't know. Virginia has over 160.
Over 160 in Virginia.
Pennsylvania has about 120. New York mm-hmm. has almost 400.
North Carolina has about 94.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland now has, for many years, Maryland just had about 9 or 11. Now they're up to about 21, is it now?
Something
21,
like that.
21, 25.
So really, when you start adding it up, it's mm-hmm. that whole, well, the seaboard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It rivals the West Coast to some...
Altogether.
Yeah.
New York is the fourth largest wine-producing state in the Union,
uh-huh.
and Virginia is the fifth largest wine-producing state in the Union. The first three, of course, on the West Coast.
Right, yes. Interesting. Let's take a little musical break, and we're going to come back and talk about some of the specific wines. We're probably going to start tasting really soon, too.
I'm a drunken-hearted man. My life seems so misery. I'm a drunken-hearted man. My life seems so misery.
Yep, it's Mouthful. My guest this evening, Ann Vercelli of Santa Rosa Junior College and from the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, Dave Barber and Carl Brenthorst. Before we start to taste, just a couple of quick things for perspective. First of all, how big a deal is it going wine tasting? I mean, is that something that people come to these regions for?
Yes, wineries are there. We're becoming known for wineries,
uh-huh.
and there are some wine trails in local
mm-hmm.
areas, and people are coming around, and promotion is there. Tourism is very big. Mm-hmm. A lot of bed and breakfasts, a lot of restaurants are developing also, so either at the wineries or nearby.
You know, the only time, I will confess, California girl that I am, the only time I've gone actual wine tasting in the United States, but not... Mm-hmm. On the Pacific coast was in outside of Ashland, Ohio. It was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very strange. They were really into, well, you want sweet or you want dry? And they, all of their wines had a scale on the back from sweet to dry. And they said, you know, we're so much more advanced than California. You're going to see pretty soon California's going to have that scale too. And
we're still waiting.
Yeah. And then they wanted it. And I was like, well, dry, please. And they give you tastes in little plastic cups. So it was just, I mean, little tiny plastic, like half ounce ramekin things.
Yeah.
So it was a whole different sort of thing than...
You can't really get a good taste out of those plastic bags.
No. And, you know, we did take a little sip and didn't really want more. But it was interesting.
A lot of that's local regulations, too.
Uh-huh.
Ohio has been kind of interesting in the way the laws they have of what they can taste and pour.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is what you're seeing.
Yeah, and we were right in Amish country, too. I mean,
yes.
You go a quarter mile away and, you know, you can visit an Amish farm and buy some preserves or something.
Right.
So it was a very interesting mix.
Well,
but
majority of at least the Atlantic Seaboard wines now, we use glasses too for tasting, so we're a little bit that way. But there is still sweeter wines made because, again, a lot of the wineries have to have something for all people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people still like a sweeter wine. You're looking for your clientele of what they're going to like. So you do have the gamut of the drier to the sweeter.
And I'm just curious, and this might not be a question that can really be answered easily, but what sort of pricing are, do we have the full range of prices, $299, you know, to $110? I mean, do we have that, or do we have sort of a particular price point you all have concentrated on?
It's not that full of a range, price range.
Okay.
Most of them, because they're newer in the area and smaller productions, I would say the least expensive would be in the $7, $8 range of many of the wineries. Yes, you can find some lower prices in the higher production areas. And then they do go up. The average is 15 to 20 to 25. But some of the higher premium production wines, you could probably pay $40 to $50.
Okay, so you're not doing some of that stuff like Napa Valley's doing?
Not yet.
No. Most of them would be under $35.
Under $35. Yeah. Okay, that's okay. Then that's exactly the sort of information I was looking for. That's interesting. And then finally, before we do start to taste, what about distribution? Do we find your wines easily in California?
No, not at all. I mean, because most of the wineries are small producers, so they sell 90% of their wine locally. Some of the larger producers, I know Constantine Frank in the Finger Lakes does have a distributor out here in California, and I know that some of the larger wineries, and they're small by California standards, but in Virginia, are interested in getting wine out onto the East Coast and beyond Virginia.
And so is that part of your motivation in making these trips out here, is to introduce people and maybe stir up demand?
Absolutely. And we were lucky this past weekend to pour five East Coast wines at Traverso's Gourmet Shop in Santa Rosa.
Traverso's a favorite of Mouthful.
And
we
they
love
had the
Traverso's.
And they had the wines that we were pouring available for purchase there.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. And now, do they still have them? Some available?
Yes. Until they sell out or until they order
until
more?
Until they sell out? Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, that's great to know. Well, I think we should taste. Okay. And tell Annie, do you want to describe or who wants to describe what we're going to do? Such a good sound. And while we're pouring, I should just say, Annie, you had a luncheon at your house today.
I did, yes.
You want to tell it? Was it for this group?
Yes.
So, do you want to tell us about it? What did you serve?
We had several courses. We had spanakopita first, followed by a warm cabbage salad with mortadella and roasted red bell peppers, vichyssoise, and then we had fresh orange pasta with peas and shrimp, lemon sorbet, pork chops puntanesca, spaghetti squash with pesto, carrots vichy, a cheese course, and then a medley of desserts and some Italian cookies. And then we featured the East Coast wines. So we had 12 East Coast wines on the table.
Wow, it sounds, how many people?
We had 16 people.
Sounds wonderful. I really appreciate the invitation. And I was so sorry I had to keep my nose to the grindstone.
Next year,
I'll plan ahead, I'll organize my schedule ahead. Mm-hmm. Plus, I had a play date with my potential new puppy, Joey. So, and I had set that up. Anyway, what are we are tasting a Gewürztraminer?
No, this is a Pinot Grigio.
Oh, Pinot Grigio.
Grigio first.
This there we go. You just labeled them for me. Pinot Grigio. Okay.
Sugarloaf Mountain from Maryland. It's Pinot Grigio. Most people are familiar with the Pinot Grigio. You get the crispness. You get some nice citrusy overtones coming through. A little the rind of the lemony kind of peel coming through, and it's a very refreshing wine. But this is Sugarloaf Mountain Vineyards from Maryland, a Pinot Grigio.
In the western part of the state, you can actually see Virginia from Sugarloaf Mountain. This was a winery that was just formed in 2006.
Really new.
Yes, very new.
Yeah, that citrus peel is really there. Really.
Yes.
Really.
And a hot
pleasant.
Summer day,
and
nice cold bottle of this.
It's very pleasant. I have not been uniformly thrilled with California Pinot Grigio. There's some I've liked, and there's some that I just think is sort of off target.
Well, Pinot Grigio
is
a wine that you want to maintain the acid. And sometimes with the California suns, it gets too ripe and the acid starts dwindling.
Yes.
Well, we don't have that problem in the East. We don't get overly ripe, and we maintain some of the acid in there.
Uh-huh. It's the cool climate that we have there, a little cooler than you have out here. Uh-huh.
It is almost unheard of for an East Coast winer to have to acidify wines because we always retain it. The problem is trying to drop it naturally.
Now, that's interesting because I always think of the East Coast as hot.
It's hot, but it's humid.
Hot and humid.
And it's not as baking hot.
It doesn't have that relentless dry heat.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I like it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Well, this is a very nice wine. But I guess I have to put it into the little dump a bucket, as they say. What's next? Now, did you pour the Pinot Grigio at lunch?
Not this wine.
Okay.
No.
So I just when we come to one that you did pour, I want to know what you paired it with.
Okay.
Okay. This one is, what do we have? It's Rosemont of Virginia is the winery. It's a Traminet.
Yeah, now this is a grape that we don't hear much about, so
Correct. You'll
have to tell us about it.
Traminet is a French hybrid, because a lot of the grapes are not as hardy. The vinifera aren't as hardy to grow in the East Coast. So Traminet is a cross between a vinifera and a Native American grape. The parent on the vinifera side is a Gewurztraminer, hence the name Traminet. And the other, I believe, is a French hybrid or Saval or something like that. That gives you the hardiness in the vine that will last the colder winters. But then the Gewurztraminer will give you the more floral spiciness in the nose.
It really has those floral. If you put a little bit in your mouth and then breathe in, your upper palate just sort of explodes with floral and spice, very much like a Gewurztraminer.
Yeah. And the Traminet's only been commercially available in the last 20 years or so. So it's a relatively new hybrid, but doing quite nicely. A lot of wineries are growing it. As I say, it is hardy and gives you that pleasant aromatics.
Yeah.
And matches up with a lot of foods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The aromatics of this are just gorgeous.
Rosemont of Virginia is another new winery. They just were formed in 2003, and their first vintage was 2007. And while they're a new winery, this is a 450-acre estate that was founded by a family back in 1858, and they're just kind of switching over from farming and cattle to the vineyard kind of thing. So it's a new winery, and we're happy to see them doing something like Traminet because we think it really works in the environment.
Yeah, and it's lovely.
Mm-hmm. Get the aromatics, it gives it a nice spiciness in there.
Yeah, this would be good with... it would be really good with Indian food. Would be good with Thai.
Eastern Thai foods.
I also think this would go really well with cauliflower. Did you have the cauliflower soup at Mustard Magic last
delicious.
Night?
Mm-hmm.
That was, I thought, one of the two best things there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was
cauliflower and the toasted mustard seeds in there just to give the point counterpoint.
Yeah, I thought it was really lovely, and I can see this wine working really well with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree. That was the first. The second was that Hungarian goulash.
Oh, really?
That okay. Hundreds, yes.
Now, my other favorite was upstairs, the pork ossobuco with the creamy polenta.
I went back for seconds on that one.
I was tempted, very tempted, but I ended up not going back.
The next one that we just opened up, just to compare and show you that we do have the vinifera there, and this is a Gewurztraminer. It happens to be a Gewurztraminer from Rhode Island, so we're a little further north.
Oh, uh-huh.
It's a Conet winery. In Rhode Island.
So can I, and where in Rhode Island?
I'm not sure, but Rhode Island's not that large.
It's just a few minutes from Newport.
And again, Rhode Island being near the ocean and the big inlet there, you still get the maritime climate.
Right,
and that's why it's a little more lenient on the winter. So you can the Gewurztraminer is hardy enough there.
Yeah.
This is a winery that was formed in 1975, so it's got a little more history on it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little larger than most of the wineries along the East Coast. They do about 30,000 cases.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they're the ones that are right there practically on the water, right near the water.
They could very well
be. I think they are. It's in a town called Little Compton.
Yeah, that's where my daughter lived in Providence for a few years. Went to bring did graduate work at Brown.
Yeah, this is not far from Providence.
They went wine tasting probably here a few times.
Mm-hmm. But here the flavor profiles, the aromatics are very similar to the Traminet.
Absolutely.
But then you're getting a little more intensity coming
density,
through. Because
a little more lush.
Yes.
Yeah, a little more lush on the palate.
Mm-hmm. And again, that same type of Thai, Oriental foods, marvelous match. A little spiciness will balance out.
Yeah, really, this is a beautiful. Now, I should go back. With that first one, we tried the Pinot Grigio. Mm-hmm. Retail price is $18. The Traminet, $14. Another Gewurztraminer, $18.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So everything so far under 20.
Yes.
And really, really lovely. I haven't let you taste anything, Lawrence. You'll just have to do it later. Why don't we take a little more musical break and come back with our next wines.
Well, when I was a young man and never been kissed, I got to thinking it over how much I had missed. So I got me a girl and I kissed her, and then, oh Lordy, well, I kissed her again, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Yeah, it's Mouthful, and while we were listening to that song, just got an idea, or not even an idea, just popped into my mouth, not literally, of course, but there's a restaurant on Green Street in North Beach, Mekadeh. It's a Persian restaurant. It's been there, oh gosh, since I think the late 80s. It's fabulous, and they have the most wonderful lamb's tongue dish. It's a traditional Persian dish. It's lamb's tongue in saffron sauce, and it's a saffron sour cream sauce. And that tremolette would be so absolutely gorgeous with it.
It does. You get the spicy florals coming through to balance the
saffron.
The saffron, yes.
Yeah. So that, oh gosh, that makes me want to grab that bottle and run down there. I love that restaurant. I haven't been there in quite a long time. You have a competition. You do a competition every July?
Every July, right. This is the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association wine competition for the 17 states that border on the Atlantic from Maine down to Florida. And we'll be in our sixth year this time. We hold it in Haymarket, Virginia.
And about how many submissions do you typically have you been
we
getting?
We had this last year, we had 110 wineries and 515 submissions. So we've been growing every year. I mean, small by California standards, but I think it just focuses on the East Coast and gives these wineries a fair shake.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying off mic that all of the wines, all of the grapes must be grown in the 17-state
region.
In the
17 state,
no cheating
correct.
With importing California
that's
grapes.
Correct. No.
We're promoting the Atlantic Seaboard, and we have to be true to our roots. And there, we grow enough grapes, a lot of grapes. Well, we're always looking to grow more grapes and a lot of wineries, so that's what we're promoting and competing against each other that way.
Now, you say you're always looking to grow more grapes. Here in California, certainly in Sonoma County, there's a backlash. Monocropping and, oh God, there goes another, you know, orchard, especially in Sebastopol, taking down apple trees. And people, you know, people don't necessarily have time in their normal lives to study sort of that big pendulum of agriculture. You know, they don't know about when grapes were taken out and apple trees put in. But are you having any sort of resistance to the growth of the wine industry in these regions?
There is some. Obviously, it's a farm area coming through, and it's people look at a winery as an industrial kind of a thing, a commercial area. Mm-hmm. And with the encroaching urbanization, people don't like that in their not in my backyard syndrome.
Uh-huh.
So some of that's happening. We had a new winery open in Fairfax, Virginia, which is just not that far out of Washington,
right.
D.C. And the state gave them the license and everything. But then when they were about to open, the county, the homeowners associations nearby said, you're going to have too many cars here. We don't like that. We don't want you to open. But they have settled that and have opened. So
they
there
have
is
opened.
Some, yes.
Uh-huh.
But there is some resistance that way.
Uh-huh.
Also, a lot of that because of pricing, people can't afford to purchase the property and start up new vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's further out in the farms and
right.
doing that. But I say we need looking to grow more grapes so we can have more wine so we can export. But then that's the big picture. When you talk about the individual wineries, some of them don't have that economics to be able to do that.
Right.
So it's a trade-off.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's taste our next wine. It is a dry Riesling.
We're skipping around.
I missed. I read the wrong one. It's a Viognier.
Viognier. This is from Delphos Vineyard in Virginia. Viognier has become very popular in Virginia. Of course, the Rhone Rangers in California brought all the red Rhones and were growing that, and they decided to bring the white Rhone varietals too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got some good Viognier producers here. Wattle Creek up in Mendocino County in particular makes a fabulous Viognier.
Yeah. But one of our wineries were here, it was in California years ago at a seminar and tasted some California Viogniers and said, this will grow in Virginia, this will do well. He brought it back or made plans to bring it back. it took off. The climate and soils are very great for Viogniers in Virginia. It's grown extensively and almost has become, you know, I like to say it's the ABC wine, anything but Chardonnay. The people are getting away from too much Chardonnay. Viognier is taking over with all the aromatics coming through. So Viognier is grown all around Virginia, North Carolina, and even a little bit in New York, too. So it's, it's growing in the East.
Yeah, Del Fosse Vineyard is founded by Claude Del Fosse, a French family. They were they formed in about the year 2000. So it's relatively new.
Annie, what do you think of this wine?
I think that the taste really follows the aromatics. Great aromatics. Great floral followed up with the taste. Follow-through is excellent on this wine, with real good balance and a good finish.
What can you imagine enjoying it with?
I could see this where it would go with light pasta dishes very, very well.
Yeah, light pasta dishes with a sweeter shellfish, I can see. Pasta with a cream sauce and either bay scallops or sea scallops in particular. Probably be really good with lobster as well.
And the profile of the Viognier, this particular one, is more, not peaches, but sort of melon, tropical fruits, honeysuckle kind of a thing, as opposed to the other aromatics, I think, of the Traminette and Gewürztraminer. So they're
I think there's some peach. There's some peach that lingers on the palate as well. Again, a very, very pretty wine.
Exactly.
So did you pick out your six favorite white wines to do today on Mouthful? Because they're all just, like, wonderful.
No. People ask me, what's my favorite wine? My first response is the one in a glass when I'm drinking it.
Okay. There you go.
So right now, this is my favorite wine.
It's lovely. It's absolutely lovely. Okay. Now, next we have...
Now we go to a Riesling.
Now we have the dry Riesling from Alba.
Michelle, if you remember from last year when we were here, we had the Chambersan from Alba.
Yes.
So we're bringing their dry Riesling.
Okay.
This is a winery that's just about 2-hour drive from New York City in the northern part of New Jersey, and they do some excellent wines. And so we welcome this opportunity to show you the dry Riesling, as last year we did the Chambersan.
And again, a little bit different profile. There's a Riesling growing well there. And it's dry, so you're not going to get that overabundance of the fruit, but it definitely is there.
The fruit's definitely there. Kiwi, not quite ripe fig, which is an interesting quality. Really good acid. The acid is bright and delicate and pretty.
Yeah.
And I think that bright acidity is just one of the things that makes a wine so food friendly.
Food wine.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that, I think, in the wines this evening, especially with that Pinot Grigio that we had earlier.
Absolutely. The Traminette as well.
Yes.
Your Rieslings have been very popular. New York is dominant in Rieslings. They grow a lot of them, especially in the Finger Lakes, because the climate is very cool and crisp, and the Rieslings will ripen and do some things. This happens to be New Jersey, not that far away, but again, it grows on many places. When you get a little further south, Virginia still grows Riesling, but not as much because it's almost too warm. You get a lose of that.
So you want it cooler.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, its roots are in Germany.
Yes.
So that makes sense. Yeah. But again, it's really, it keeps saying it's nice over and over, but they are. What would we want to enjoy this with?
I'll defer to Annie on that.
As you wait until she picks up
the glass.
I think it
goes really well with green foods, the green foods of spring. Sugar snap peas, English peas, leeks, I think. Especially those nice oven roasted leeks, put a little mustard vinaigrette on. What do you think, Annie?
I think it would go good with poultry dishes also.
Yeah, this would be a nice wine with... A nice wine with a chicken breast. Nice, juicy, organic chicken breast.
So you get all those flavors coming through.
So I should tell you, yes, we're tasting all white wines, and I specifically requested when we set up the show, and you're so efficient, Annie, we set this up months ago. If only every guest I ever had was so committed to taking care of things in advance. But I specifically requested that this time we focus on white wines. I think that there's a real interest in white wines now. I'm finding more and more people, and myself included, who's suddenly drinking a lot more white wine than I did in the past. For me, it has to do with its refreshing quality. And I think it's also the industry. It's like somebody sort of stuck their hand in and loosened things up. So it's not all Chardonnay, Chardonnay, Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. So I just, that's what I wanted to do. Maybe when you come back next year, we'll focus on reds or
whatever. Yeah.
Whatever you want, Michelle.
Is there much of a rosé movement?
Rosés are growing again. Uh-huh. You'll see a lot of wineries doing rosés. I mean, we do one made of Chambertin, a French hybrid grape, mm-hmm. which is, and make it a dry rosé in a true European style.
Oh, nice.
And we've been doing that for years. And when I was in Bergerac a couple years ago, mm-hmm. had it there, and the French said, we were at a tasting, and the French said, where is this wine made? And I said, Virginia. No, no, no. Where is it made? And I said, Virginia. No, no, it's a French wine. I said, no, it's
oh,
a Virginian wine. So
that's great.
The French like it too, and of course, all the people who are buying it, enjoying it too. Uh-huh. But they're aperitif style wines and go with a lot more food. So
Yeah, very food friendly. Mm-hmm.
The wine that David is describing is from his winery in Hartwood Winery in Virginia.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like I'm very interested in dry rosés.
Yes.
Partly because I have a real interest in Hawaiian foods, mm-hmm. in Hawaiian cooking. And I find that dry rosés are one of the best choices for a lot of the traditional Hawaii. Yeah. I mean, dry rosé and poi actually work really well together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to take another sip of this one. And then we're going to move on.
We have one more wine. We're doing another Riesling. And for the last wine. And this Riesling is Chateau Lafayette Renault from New York, the Finger mm-hmm. Lakes. Now, this has a little more sweetness in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2.7.
About 2.7 residual uh-huh. sugar.
But you probably won't perceive it as a sweeter wine because, uh-huh. again, the acids are there to balance it.
Uh-huh.
And in our competition this past year, this happened to be the best of show.
Oh, it is?
So that's why we brought that along to include that. So this is from Chateau Lafayette Renault, a Riesling from the Finger Lakes. Again, you get the nice aromatics, the peaches, apricots coming through. The acids balance it, so even a little sweetness, just gives you a little more body,
uh-huh.
and it's not a cloyingly sweet wine.
Probably been better with Thai food than the previous one.
Get the roundness of all the flavors coming through.
Oh, that's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really, really lovely.
Yeah.
Good balance, good aromatics.
Mm-hmm. Again, this just takes me straight to some of my favorite Indian foods. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think some of these Rieslings also would be good with barbecue. When you think of barbecue, you always think of different sauces with barbecue.
Yeah.
And the acid in the Riesling will cut through, but also be very compatible with the sauces in various barbecue, which
I think that's a really good point.
Popular.
Yeah. Did you have the barbecued pork sliders last night?
Absolutely.
I did too. Oh, I didn't catch up on the prices. So those last three that we tasted, the Viognier is the most expensive one at $24. The dry Riesling from Alba is $14. And this Riesling is $15.
Mm-hmm. So again, they're all quite affordable, and you have a whole array of wines. And this is sort of a general price range of them. You can go a little higher for the quality wines. Uh-huh. Some of the other hybrid wines are some of the ones that grow more prolifically, mm-hmm. will be a little less expensive too.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the pricing points are about the same way I said, $15 uh-huh. to $25 is what you'll find in many of the wineries uh-huh. for the good quality wines. You can get a good bottle of wine for that price range. Uh-huh.
Excellent. So at lunch today, these weren't the wines you served.
We did serve the last one.
The last one.
Lafayette.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Since
it was our best of show.
Okay. So what were the wines some of the wines you served today? I'm interested in what some of your pairings were in.
Well, we had the wines. We actually didn't pair them with
the
foods.
Okay, just had them available.
They were available on the tables and everyone could taste them and we mm-hmm. talked about them. We had a French hybrid, a red Maréchal Foch, which was a bigger red wine, one of the original ones promoting to which should be growing in the 1960s, 1970s. It still mm-hmm. grows here a little bit or currently.
This was from Prigene Winery in New York uh-huh. in the Finger Lakes region.
We had a Norton from Cooper Vineyards in Virginia. Norton, as we mentioned earlier, is a Native American grape mm-hmm. discovered and very popular, and it's made a comeback and is very popular coming through.
We did have a Traminette, not from Rosemont, Virginia, but from Goose Watch up in New York in mm-hmm. the Finger Lakes region.
We had another Riesling, too, I believe, and a Gewürztraminer, and I forget exactly who they were.
The Gewürztraminer was from Saconic.
Okay.
Which I guess is the one we have right here. Actually, we did have one of those.
Okay.
And we had a Barbersville Sauvignon Blanc.
Right, from Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And a Barbersville Merlot. And we have a new winery, a very small winery in Virginia called Sunset
Sunset Hills.
Sunset Hills. And they only had three entries in our competition. Two got golds and one got silver. So we had their Cabernet Franc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our general feeling, Dave's and mine, and I think Ann's too, is that Cabernet Franc really is the red grape that does so well in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and North Carolina.
Sunset Hills was the Cabernet Franc, as Carl said, it was a gold medal winner, but also the best of class.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And another one we had was Fox Meadow from Virginia, which was their Le Renault Rouge, which is the Red Fox in French. And that was a blend. It's a Bordeaux-style blend, but predominantly Cabernet Franc. And they have done very well with their wines also.
And we had the Constantine Frank Riccazzatelli.
Correct, yeah. Riccazzatelli is a grape a lot of people don't know about. It's indigenous to Central Asia. So it is...
Riccazzatelli.
Yes.
Okay. Mm.
Grows currently in... Georgia, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, but Dr. Constantine Frank was from the Ukraine, and in the 1950s when he emigrated to New York, he was a winemaker there, brought it with him, started growing it in New York, grows in New York, grows in Virginia, I think.
Someone it also
even said
grows,
it grows in California.
It grows in New Jersey also. Thomas Ellis Cellars, which is the largest winery in New Jersey, does a sparkling Riccazzatelli. Mm-hmm.
That gets me to one of my next questions. Talk to me about sparkling wine from the Atlantic seaboard.
It's growing.
Yeah.
Most of them are doing Method Champenois, and many of them are doing traditional. The traditional blends, Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir doesn't grow. It depends where you are. On the Long Island, Finger Lakes, Pinot Noir ripens. If you get to Virginia, it doesn't ripen too much because of the nature of the grape and the humidity.
Yeah, we think Pinot Noir would hate humidity.
It does because it's a thin skin, tight bunch, and it just rots. So most of it rots before it ripens. But the higher elevation, you can do a varietal. But a lot of the Pinot Noir grown is picked before it's completely ripened to put in the sparkling wines.
Much like it is in Champagne and France.
Uh-huh. So what are some of the sparkling wines from that region that...
Well, there's another one, too. Dennis Horton happened to have all this Viognier that he brought over. He started making a sparkling Viognier, the first one in the world. And that's very lovely,
that's
very nice.
Dennis Horton?
Dennis Horton, Horton Vineyards, Horton Cellars,
Horton Vineyards. So sparkling Viognier. Mm-hmm.
That's in central Virginia, down by the Charlottesville area, near Monticello.
Maybe next year we do sparkling. Maybe next year we do sparkling and rosés.
Okay.
I think that sounds like a deal. Forget what I was going to say. Oh, I know. How did you two specifically get involved in this?
Oh, 30, 40 years ago, I started drinking. It was downhill since.
But you found a way probably to get it paid for.
That's right. Yeah.
But you also have a winery.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
It's a small winery in Virginia, Fredericksburg, Virginia. It's Heartwood Winery.
Heartwood.
We're a very small production, but we do have quite a few wines. We currently have 12 wines available. We grow French hybrids on site, Sauval Blanc, Vidal Blanc, and Chamberson, and we use them in different area, different styles.
Uh-huh.
And then we also have our remote vineyards that we grow our vinifera, Chardonnay, Viognier, Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon.
Mm-hmm. So you do a lot.
Yeah,
a lot
12
of different
varieties, but again, we're small.
About how many cases a year?
Well, not enough, but it's about 1,500 cases.
So 1,500, and sell all from the winery, distribute in the region?
90%. We do have a distributor, but most of our wine is sold from the winery, but we can ship direct shipping to the states that allow it. California used to be one, so I think it still is.
Yeah, and maybe that's changing. There was just that ruling a few weeks ago that looks like maybe... We're finally going to shake that weird system we have.
Great.
We could hope. Carl, what about you? How did you get involved in this?
Oh, well, I'm an old California boy who the government made me an offer in the 1960s, and I came east. Offer I couldn't refuse.
Uh-huh. So I came east. What sort of offer was that?
Well, from the Department of Defense.
Oh,
it's called the draft.
Oh, one of those kind of offers. I see.
So I came east and ended up on the east. But I retired in 1997 after about 34 years. But in my travels, continued to keep my interest in wine. So I was looking for something where I could help promote the industry, and that's how I got involved with first the Vinifera Wine Growers Association. And we changed our name here last year to the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. But I'm also in, like David, I'm in the American Wine Society, Brotherhood of Knights of the Vine, a number of other societies that allow you to learn about wine, enjoy wine, and help promote wine.
Have you ever made wine?
I tried one time. I was unsuccessful as far as putting the chemistry together. So rather than poison people, I thought I would just help promote wine.
You know, sometimes that's the best thing you can do. One thing I'm curious about, let's talk about the restaurant angle. What's up with getting these wines onto, starting with the Atlantic Seaboard wine list?
Some locally, some of the wineries do distribute and sell to restaurants.
Uh-huh.
Some wineries in some states have a restaurant associated with them. A lot more in New York because there's a lot more of them. It's a larger state, but North Carolina is doing some of that and a couple in Virginia.
I'm not sure what you said. They have wineries associated with, connected to the winery?
A restaurant, not the winery.
A restaurant,
yes.
And a winery. Oh, yeah. Okay. We have very few of those. We have a few in California.
Mm-hmm.
But zoning and permitting has
exactly.
really kept the number down, but there are some notable ones. Coppola, which Wente,
yes.
which is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. So some of that in New York, mostly.
A lot more in New York, especially around the Finger Lakes
that
I'm aware of. I'm sure that other location, other trails too, only because there's so many wineries right there and the towns aren't that close by.
Sure.
So people are driving around and
they have to eat something.
Put a restaurant together.
Mm-hmm.
So
what about in Virginia?
There's a couple. Chateau Marset has a restaurant with it. Of course, Barbersville has a marvelous restaurant. It's a multi-star. I forget how many stars.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they do the Italian style to match their Italian style wines. So it's you do it with some nice structure.
Okay, we're going to take another quick musical break here, and we'll be back and tell you how you can get a hold of these fine gentlemen and learn about their wines. We'll also get a preview of what Annie may be doing coming up at Santa Rosa Junior College.
There stands the glass that will ease all my pain, that will settle my brain. It's my first one today. There stands the glass that will hide all my tears, that will drown all my fears.
Well, time flies when you're having a good time, and it always flies on Mouthful. So just to review really quickly, we have tasted six wines from the Atlantic Seaboard: Pinot Grigio from Sugarloaf, Treminet from Rosemont of Virginia, Gewürztraminer from Saconnet, Viognier from Delphos in Virginia, Dry Riesling from Alba in New Jersey, and Riesling from Chateau Lafayette Renault in New York. Thank you so much for putting these together. Really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
We've already booked them for a year from tonight. In the meantime, people want to know more. How do they get? What's your website?
The website is www.vwga.org.
Okay, without the W's,
VWGA.org. That's because our
V-W-G-A.
Previous name was Vinifera Wine Growers Association.
Okay, so it's going to be counterintuitive. VWGA.org will get you to the organization, Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association.
We have all our award-winning wines out there from the five previous competitions, and you have an idea of the list of the judges and, of course, the board members and this kind of thing.
Great, and to get to Heartwood Winery.
HeartwoodWinery.com.
Heartwood Winery. There, that makes it easy. Great.
And it's Heartwood, H-A-R-T. H-A-R-T-W-O-O-D.
H-A-R-T.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Heart is the old English word for deer or stag.
Yes. Heartwood Winery. Okay, well, thank you so much. And when do you head back?
Wednesday.
So you've got a couple more days here.
Yes.
Well, I hope. Do you have plans?
We're going to try some wine out here. We heard you make some nice wines.
We do. We actually do. Well, have a wonderful time. Annie, what are you doing in the next few months at Santa Rosa Junior College?
My Italian cooking class starts the beginning of February. It's Italian 4. I offer six different courses in Italian cuisine, and I'm happy to say this is my 29th year.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's hands-on. We make four menu items a night. We sit down at one table as a family, and cuisine as well as culture comes up in the class. We have Italian wine with dinner, and we always taste an Italian cheese or a salumi or an Italian liqueur. So it's the place to be on Thursday nights.
Oh, it's on Thursday nights.
Yes.
And so people can find out about it by going to santarosa.edu, go into culinary arts, and just really search for your classes taught by Ann Vercelli, V-E-R-C-E-L-L-I. Is that
yes.
correct? And can people contact you by email?
Yes. A.M. Vercelli.
A.M.?
Yes.
Vercelli, V-E-R-C-E-L-L-I, at?
Myway.com.
myway.com.
Well, and my wine course starts the end of March, wine service and hospitality, where we talk about all the different avenues that a student can go in the wine industry.
Oh, great.
Lots of speakers, several field trips.
Uh-huh.
Very, very exciting time.
Outstanding. That's great. I haven't been at the JC for the last couple semesters because of cutbacks. I really miss. I can't wait till I get my classes back. So, and I'll tell you when that happens. In the meantime, meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. And again, if you're waiting for podcasts, they'll be coming. If you become a fan on Facebook of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, the information will be posted there first as soon as the podcasts have been uploaded. Have a great week. Take care.
Some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the